This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Let me introduce you to maybe one of the biggest podcasts in the world. Fram Gang Spotten with Alexander Perleros.
Today, we have the tenacious entrepreneur Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary is the quintessential digital modern day superhero with millions of followers every day in social media. He is the five-time New York Times best-selling author, angel investor, like his investment in Facebook and Twitter. His vast career stems from immigrating from Soviet Union to the Queens, New York in the late 70s, knowing zero English, to founding the most popular digital marketing agency in the world, VaynerMedia. We talked about his hustle mentality and his ambition to build the greatest empire and also the trends of social media. Without further ado, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Let me introduce you to Fram Gang Spotten with Alexander Perleros.
Today we have the tenacious entrepreneur, best-selling author, and quintessential digital modern-day superhero. His motivational speeches and sharp wisdom have captivated millions of people across the globe. Without further ado, Gary Vaynerchuk. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
And for the listeners tuning in today that don't know so much about your upbringing, let's take us back for a bit. You were born in Belarus, Soviet Union, and in the late 70s, immigrated to Queens, New York, knowing zero English. You came from poor conditions and your family didn't have so much. Can you give us some insight into that chapter in your life?
You know, I've come to learn how much I like psychology and human behavior. And I, you know, when I think about that chapter of my life, I realize how much that was the establishment of who I am today. You know, when you don't have much, if you're fortunate and have the right DNA and right parenting surrounding you in that circumstance, you become grateful and thankful for what you have. And you also develop a level of thick skin because you're dealing with a lot of adversity, and you develop a level of work ethic because you realize that, you know, your parents aren't going to hand you every toy you want. And so, you know, I think a lot of the things that I'm grateful for characteristically came from those humble beginnings. And, you know, those are the, I would argue those years are the foundation of my success. I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation around the first 5 or 6 or 7 years of one's life, how foundational those are. And, you know, I definitely associate with that. I understand that because I feel that in my story.
Mm. And I read that you count sheets of toilet paper for your family in a tiny studio apartment in New York.
We were just very, very, frugal, right? It would not only that, but, you know, my sister's dress for my dad's 30th birthday, because my parents had us in their early 20s. So I remember my dad's 30th birthday very well. My sister's dress was made out of the curtains in our, in our kitchen. There was just an incredible, value put on saving money at all costs.
Right.
And there was, you know, I think that was a really, you know, important part. And so, yes, like not going out to eat, not going on vacations, you know, crazy things like your sister's dress being made out of curtains because they were ready to change out the curtains, but you don't just throw away the curtains. That value for limited resources was definitely established at that point in my life.
And how has that infected you?
You know, it's funny. I'm definitely not as frugal as one might think when they hear that story. I don't value, you know, I'm definitely loose with my money. I'm a saver, but I'm not one that overly values dollars. I think what it really made me, it was less that it made me overly thoughtful with money. I think it made me very simple. I think I'm a really simple guy. I don't really need much. I need my process. I need to enjoy what I'm doing. But when it comes to stuff, I don't put material items on a pedestal. And I feel like those humble beginnings probably put me in that place. I didn't look up to people with nicer things than me. I just didn't care. And I felt like it did the job, right? If I wore, for example, almost all my clothes starting in third grade were liquor promotional items, t-shirts, sweatshirts, you know, like, because my dad would get
Was it like Coca-Cola or was it? No, it was liquor.
It was liquor, which was even funnier because I was a child wearing vodka t-shirts, you know.
Did you have Absolute Vodka?
Of course. And I think, you know, I think that was because if we were going to get this free promotional material, then why buy clothes? And that's how I live my life. And I'm grateful for that because it does, as an adult, I didn't have a need to have the same things that my contemporaries did. I don't need, now that I'm playing in a different arena, I don't need, you know, when I have a friend that brags about having a private plane or a boat or a third mansion somewhere, it doesn't register to me as something that, you know, I need. And more importantly, when I hear it, I go into one of two places. A, I'm so happy for my friend, or B, I hope my friend's not buying this just to show off because deep down they're actually insecure.
But can it also be like that, that if you hear a friend of you buy a yacht or always fly private plane, that you're like, all right, this is not a friend that we have so much in common. This is not a friend that I want to hang out with.
If they're doing it in a way to try to make other people feel bad, yes. You know, but if they're doing it as a, you know, a normal conversation or even out of pride for their own accomplishments, that doesn't necessarily go into a negative place in my mind. The only time, to your point, the place where that would take me if I was to not want to spend as much time with that person, it meant that they were using those luxuries to impose on other people.
Right. Okay. I must say something because you are actually the only guy that I have this in common that I have talked to, but it actually makes me sick to my stomach when I just think about it. But some awful kids were bullying you and they forced you to drink something when you were a kid and it took a pee. And it was actually the same for me. I was at a party and it was like 10 guys and I was 14, 15 and they was 18 and they was giving me a couple of a beer. And it was, and then when I was drinking it, everybody was laughing at me. And that was a very bad moment for me. And I never heard that, but when I was reading your story, I heard that it was the same for you.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think everybody, you know, mine was younger. It was when I first moved to Dover, New Jersey. So I was six or so, and it was out of a Pepsi can. And to me, you know, that sticks with you. Here I am 38 years later, and I remember that story.
Yeah, same for me.
What I like about that story, though, is I think that modern parenting and society tries to protect people from everything. And I think it makes people fear everything. And so for me, I'm grateful I went through that process because I think humiliation and being picked on, learning how to deal with adversity within yourself, not your parents going to fight for you or, you know, I think everything in balance, right? Everything in balance, you know, sustained bullying, I think is very concerning and dangerous and authorities and parents and teachers should step in. But I do think occasional adversity is an important thing to learn how to deal with. And I would argue that there's probably a lot of things that you learned about yourself and the people around you from that terrible experience that you probably, without even realizing, took with you as you became older and has probably helped you deal with lesser. I always think like when you've been through a world war, COVID doesn't seem like too bad. I think for a lot of people, yeah, coronavirus and COVID is going to be something that is going to be helpful for them when they get older, because when their food delivery is an hour late, they don't think that that's so horrible. And or when they go out and have to stay, you know how many people go out and stand in a line and it's cold and they're upset. Well, maybe now they'll say, well, at least I can go to this concert because a year ago I had to sit in my house. So I do think perspective, you see where I'm going?
The listeners want to hear very much about your hustling, and you went from bagging ice for $2 per hour to scaling your father's wine shop from $3 million to $60 million. How do you identify the hustle? Is it something innate or is it learned? What's your secret sauce?
My secret sauce is making people, finding balance, making people understand that work ethic is a variable of success. Like, you can't hope to eat well and do push-ups to get into better physical shape. You have to actually do it. Same with hustle. Now, the word hustle, as you know, because you're very savvy, it's been manipulated and changed and twisted at this point and almost speaks to mental health issues. So I don't use the word hustle as much because I don't want there to be confusion, because the manifestation of the word. I use work ethic. I think work ethic is unbelievably important, but I don't think it should come at your physical or mental health. So we all have different capacities. When I started working out on my muscles 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I could only do 10 pound curls. Now I can do 40 pound curls. Same with work. You know, if you're listening right now and you've been quote unquote lazy, or this was the time that you realized, oh my God, it is work ethic that I'm missing, you're not going to be able to necessarily maybe physically work a 12 hour day, but mentally enjoying what you do. So for me, the reason it's always been easy work is because I love it. For me, selling baseball cards, lemonade, washing cars. By the way, the first couple of years of working at my dad's store bagging ice, I didn't like it. And they were very long days because I used to do baseball card shows and I would stand in the mall for 15 hours, no problem. You know, set up 2 hours before the mall opened, close after, no problem. But then go to my dad's liquor store after 3 hours, I was like, ugh, I'm tired, because it wasn't fun to bag ice. Once I was eventually upstairs and started selling, learning about wine, then I became a 16-year-old that could work 15 hours a day because I loved it. So it's about the energy that it brings to you. And, you know, I used to struggle through first period of high school. One class, 45 minutes. I would be devastated because I disliked it. So I understand why people struggle with work. It's because they dislike it. And I also know that people burn out and overwork themselves because they think if they work really hard for a couple of years, they'll get millions of dollars and then live on a beach. And that never works either. So, you know, to me, it's balance. It's understanding that it's 100% true that it is a factor in success, but also understanding that you have to enjoy it to be able to put in those many hours. And then number three, we're all built chemically, energy-wise, different, and you need to listen to your body. So you need to sleep, you need to rest, you need to vacation, you need to escape and watch a movie or play a video game or balance it out. But I do find that if you love it, you'll find yourself working more hours than the average person.
Right. And how do you find your passion? How do you find what you love?
It's the same way you find what your favorite food is. You have to try things. You know, if you haven't found it, if it didn't come natural for you to find it, I mean, I don't know how I found it. All of a sudden, when I was 7, when it would snow, I thought it was more fun to go ring a doorbell and, you know, shovel the snow for $2. It was almost like it was so natural to me. But to your point, other people either A, are scared what they like is not practical, or they fear failing in it, or B, they just haven't had it. Like, you know, you don't know that a hot dog is your favorite hot dog when, you know, your favorite food when you're born. It takes you going to a baseball game or whatever, or you're going to a barbecue when you're 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years old, having it and saying, I love this. You don't know what your passion is until you do it. When I was 4, if I understood the conversation from, let's say, my late great, you know, grandfather, Jedrzejka Shaya, you know, Grandpa Shaya, if he said, do you love school? Do you love work? Like, I wouldn't have been able to answer. I had to go live it for the next 5 to 10 years. And then I knew the answer. And I think people sitting right now, skiing might be your passion. You know, I always think about Novak Djokovic, who says that, you know, he worked at his family's restaurant in Croatia and they built a tennis court behind the restaurant and his family loved skiing. If that tennis court isn't built, he's not the number one player in tennis in the world. He thinks skiing is his passion, not tennis. You have to taste.
All right. Now I want to dive deep into your digital marketing world. And you have mentioned that anyone who has a business or trying to scale their social media should be posting every day. Can you elaborate on this notion, Gary?
I can. It is like push-ups, and I'll keep using that analogy. Every day you do a push-up, things happen for your muscles. I also believe that people listening right now don't have the ideas of what to post, and some days are just tired. So I'd like you to post every day because I know something will happen every time you do. But I do want everybody to hear, and this is something I'm adding to my content, and I'm glad to say it on your podcast. It's okay if you don't. Don't beat yourself up. You can even go a month without posting because you're in a bad place or you're in a good place and you want to just get away for the month of August. But the reason I say post is because it's free distribution and awareness. I mean, the internet and social networks are incredible. We, you know, I grew up pre-social networks, pre-internet, really. So the idea of being able to get people to know about you and your business cost money. The fact that you can now build an audience on TikTok or Facebook or Instagram or YouTube without anything other than your content and the equipment to make that content is usually in your hand because everybody at least has a cell phone and the camera and the editing quality on an iPhone is remarkable or an Android device. So, you know, I think it's missed opportunity when one doesn't post. And I think that, I think people need to think about that.
Vill du vara med på Sveriges största framgångswebinar någonsin? Några av de främsta gästerna från Framgångspodden. Superentreprenören Rickard Deler. Fredrik Hjelm, grundare Voi. Sveriges främsta ledarskapscoacher som Annika R. Malmberg. Och många, många fler. Tre kvällar fullt med mästarna i Sverige som delar med sig av sina metoder för att bli framgångsrik. Gå in på framgångsakademin.se för att signa upp dig på detta event som är värt många, många tusen kronor. Men just nu är gratis. Kolla länk i poddbeskrivningen eller gå in på framgångsakademin.se. Du vill inte missa det här.
All right. And can you give us some insight into your content team? How big is your team? And
Of course. So
how much content do you create per day on each platform?
So a couple things. Before I talk about my content team around Gary Vee, it's important for everybody to hear the first thing. From 2006 to 2014, for 8 years, I had nobody. You know, and you can imagine why that's important because what I'm about to say, which is I have 15 people on my team, is going to make everybody who's listening say, well, he's so lucky. Well, he's, you know, he's well off enough to be able to afford it. Everything he's saying is bullshit. It took me 8 years of doing everything myself. And you know this about me. I posted every day, 8 years, to get to a place where I got financially secure enough to be able to build something of that nature. And by the way, it started with one person, Steve Unwin. Then it was Andy Kay. Then it was D-Rock and India, you know. And so now it's 15 people. It's 15 people. It really only, so everybody's listening, it only needs to be three or four. The reason I do 15 is I use my team to train VaynerMedia. I use my team to eventually go into VaynerMedia. So I use my team as a training ground. So it's bigger than it quote unquote needs to be because it's strategic for my marketing firm at VaynerX. And when I say VaynerX, they may go to the Sasha Group, which is a small business agency, or they may go to PureWow or 137 PM, which is a publishing site, or they may go into Vayner Productions. So we have a lot of, you know, businesses. Anyway, what that all means in a long-winded way is we put out probably 25 to 30, 40, maybe 50 pieces of creative a day.
A day. Is that include Insta stories or that?
That does include Insta stories. Anything that's put out. So to your point, right. You know, and by the way, Insta stories are probably about 5 to 6 of them. There's 4 Instagram posts. There's, you know, I myself.
So much content.
So much content. I myself do all my own Twitter. I do all the copy for Instagram. We do 4 Instagrams normally. We do 4 TikToks, 5 TikToks. We do 4 to 5 LinkedIn posts, a YouTube video every other day or so. 4 to 5 Facebook posts, you know, it, to your point, Instagram stories, there's also Team Gary Vee accounts because I do everything myself. So I want to make sure everybody knows Gary Vee is me, not somebody acting as me. That's why we have Team Gary Vee as an account to interact. You know, so look, it's a prolific content strategy. There's a podcast that goes out every day. You know, it's this is a real, real production team. And so I believe in this. I, you know, one thing I'm very proud of is I talk about things that I live. And so when I talk about putting content every day, but again, 8 years by myself. And at first, because I couldn't create, the first 2 years, 90% of what I made was responses to Twitter. Somebody would type in something about a website or email or wine. Those are the three things I knew back then. I knew, and the Jets, you know, I would talk about sports. I would talk about wine. I would talk about email because I was a good email marketer. And I would talk about websites because I was website. And I would talk about YouTube because I was a very early YouTuber in 2006. So, yeah.
And what platform, Gary, will be the next big thing on your mind?
You know, I'm not sure. One thing that is interesting about me is I don't, you know, I get a lot of credit for predicting Notre Dame. I don't predict. I'm very good at moving fast when I see it. So, for example, not only was I early on TikTok, I was early on Musical.ly, which was the precursor to TikTok, you know? And so I think that what I'm good at is really seeing what people are doing, and then I move fast, whether that was Vine or Facebook or YouTube. So I don't know what's next, but I definitely know the second I see it, I will be there early, fast, and hard. I do think that there's, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality and blockchain and 5G. There's so many incredible technologies brewing, that I'm so excited. And I do think that TikTok and Snapchat over the last 5 to 7 years has proven that with social networks, there'll always be a new one. And so right this second, there's a young someone who's got the seed of an idea that will become the next great social network. And I can't wait to play in it, move quickly in it, and understand how to bring value in it.
Mm. And how do you hook the viewer within seconds of making a video?
I think there's a lot of different ways. There's the math way and there's the art way. The math way is there are a lot of people out there that spend an amazing amount of time analytically understanding what words work better, what actions work better, title, thumbnails. I mean, the YouTube ecosystem. One of the reasons I'm not as big of a YouTube success story is I actually am not analytically strong at the titles and the thumbnails that would make YouTube wildly successful. I, on the other hand, am very strong at the second part, which is authentically strong content. I really know what I'm talking about. I was blessed with a personality trait that is interesting to people. And so I think the two ways is math and art. I'm more art, my natural charisma and communication style, and the fact that I actually have something to say about real things makes me work. Other people may not have all of that, but they have 8 out of my 10 or 6 out of my 8, but they also are even better at the analytics part. What time to post? How long should it be? So I think if you're listening right now, either you have it, you just have it. You are that person, or you have the ability to mathematically understand and get very good at it. A person I think does both well on YouTube is Mr. Beast. He's not only good at it, he's also extremely good at the title and thumbnails and the art, the mathematical art of YouTube, hence why he's so substantially big.
But what are your thoughts about people being depressed from social media?
I have a pretty interesting thought on this, which is, you know, when I was a kid, we blamed MTV and magazines for showing supermodels that were rail thin as to why young girls were depressed. You know, we blamed Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach as a show that was too aspirational and unrealistic, which made people have a bad relationship with money. I think that humans are very good at blaming platforms instead of holding themselves accountable. You know, I think it goes back to our piss story. I think either, you know, some people like that had that happen, like you and I had, use that as an excuse to why they're not happy or successful the rest of their lives. So I think right now people are unbelievably interested in blaming technology for their unhappiness instead of blaming their parents, their circumstances, or themselves. You know, and I think we're demonizing the platforms. The platforms are empty and really affirmation bias. You see what you're looking for. I can go on Twitter right now, follow nobody, and find good and bad. Forget about an algorithm that tags me. So I think this is more about perspective. And I think we need to spend more time within ourselves and finding more balance in society around merit and kindness. And I think both liberal and conservative sides have, in their least, when they're more centered, have incredible validation around their beliefs. I think right now in the globe, they've become extremes. And I think we ourselves as individuals have lost our balance of both sides of, call it, modern and traditional values. And in that, have decided to blame Facebook, which is laughable, versus blaming ourselves. And so, yeah, I don't take the same stance that a lot of people do. First of all, you're more than welcome to delete the app. Now what's your excuse?
Right, right.
Like this is so interesting to me. But, you know, again, I remind a lot of parents, you had eating disorders because you thought you needed to look like Kate Moss. There was no social networks then. And so we will always look at people. We will always try to disguise our insecurities. And I think that that is a huge vulnerability. And blame is not going to fix it.
And from blame to hate, you have mentioned that your comments have a 10 to 1 ratio. For every 10 positive remarks of, I love you, Gary Vee, you always have the one comment of, you're a piece of shit. How do you handle haters?
With compassion and empathy and understanding. You know, I have enormous conviction on stage, which, you know, conviction is a fine line between conviction and ego, you know, in its manifestation to the outside world. So I say to myself, if I'm not me and I'm going through a feed and I'm not in a good place and I see me for 49 seconds with happiness and conviction and a little bit of like straight shooting, that's going to trigger me to dislike. And so I understand. I know that these people don't know me. You know a lot about me because you've done your research for this podcast. And like you said, we interacted in Sweden for a quick second and that dinner and those things. But you don't know me. And you know a lot more about me than 99% of people that leave a comment. So I deal with hate the same way I deal with love, which is I don't get too high and I don't get too low, because the reality is the individual on the other side doesn't have enough context to really make a call. And so I spend a lot of time really paying attention to how the people closest to me feel about me and use that as my balance to who am I with my own feelings about myself. And that's how I live my life.
Hmm. And to the last question then, how do you want the world to remember you?
You know, I've said this recently. I want the world to remember me as somebody who gave more than they took. But because
I love that one.
Thank you. I want to give you a different variation of it just to give you something, because I figured you might, or some other people might have heard that, because I'm pretty consistent. That really is truly the answer, but there is a different variation. I would love to be known as, for my own selfish energy, as the business person that came along that made kindness and warmth and empathy, like a trait of a successful business person, because I don't think that's how we think about it in society today.
Can you provide an example of a short-term goal and a long-term goal for your future?
Yeah, short-term, I'm excited to really navigate a post-COVID world. What am I going to do with my real estate, you know, situations for my companies? How am I going to manage and lead my companies through letting people work from home and have better work-life balance? Because I know they could be effective with, you know, with technology. How am I going to lead with smart strategies? And I want to do a great job and position my people to be happy, fruitful, and successful. Long-term, I'm very fascinated by film and television. And I think the skill sets that I've created in marketing and around myself translate well into that universe. And I think I'm curious how I play and how effectively I play in that universe in a decade from today.
And for everyone listening right now, go follow Gary Vee on all of his social platforms. I put the link in the bio. It was a complete honor to have you here today. Thank you very much, Gary.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Fram Gang Spotting with Alexander Traleros.
All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Authentic Practical Advice by Real Estate Experiment. I love the practicality and humility that comes with Gary and the team's podcast. Their ability to answer questions and serve the community from a very humble place is extremely powerful and practical for the community, including me. Thanks for your big heart and passion, Gary. You can literally hear it through the headphones. Highly recommend. Thanks to Real Estate Experiment. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.